Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, you're listening to On Israel in Al Monitor. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. As we all know, all honeymoons must come to an end. And that also goes for the honeymoon between Israel's new government and the administration in Washington. The disagreements and glitches that have surfaced in recent weeks were to be expected. The question is, where the couple, Naftali Bennett and Joe Biden, go next? Will the relationship keep deteriorating with the warm embrace replaced by sore hostility and frustration? Or will they manage to make things work with or without couples therapy and exchange the honeymoon bliss for a realistic existence with occasional ups and downs and each side recognizing the flaws of the other? This is a moment of truth for the Bennett-Lapid government, and its timing is unfortunate. It comes just as the government is struggling to push the budget through the Knesset this week, while Benjamin Netanyahu tries desperately to attempt just one coalition member to vote against the budget and bring down the government. Bennett and Lapid are doing all they can to signal confidence that no one will jump ship and that the multi-party coalition is solid. The public disagreements with Israel's closest ally began with what has become a chronic headache: American insistence on reopening the Jerusalem consulate to serve the city's Palestinian residents. Then came the decision by Defense Minister Gantz to designate six Palestinian organizations as terrorist groups, and this was followed by the approval of thousands of new housing units for Jewish settlements in the West Bank. The Americans didn't even try to hide their anger. Secretary of State Blinken gave Gantz an almost public dressing down over the phone. The State Department issued a statement of condemnation. Officials in Washington briefed reporters to signal their frustration with the Israelis who keep pushing the limits of the understandings reached between the sides. Today's guest is a veteran, experienced peace activist. He is an expert on the Israeli-Palestinian peace process and on U.S.-Israel relations, a former diplomat who represented Israel in the U.S., served as a special advisor to Yossi Beilin during the Oslo Accords period, and was Prime Minister's Ehud Barak media advisor. Gadi Baltiansky is the Director General of the Geneva Initiative, a 2003 alternative peace plan promoted by leading Israeli and Palestinian figures in an attempt to steer the sides in the right direction. Baltiansky also heads Education for Peace, which is yet another of his efforts to promote peace with the Palestinians. He joins us right after this short break.
I'm Elizabeth Hagedorn, and I'm the State Department correspondent at Al Monitor.
And I'm Joe Snell. I'm Al Monitor's video editor. Let's admit it, this past year has been difficult to stay on top of the news and sift through what's accurate and what's misleading. Let Al Monitor help you.
If you care about the Middle East and North Africa, you should consider listening to Al Monitor's audio series On the Middle East with Andrew Parasoliti and Amber Nzaman, and On Israel with Ben Kaspi. You can now watch our newest video podcast, Reading the Middle East with Gilles Capel. You can subscribe to these series on your favorite podcast platforms.
And through a host of free daily and weekly newsletters, we offer a range of perspectives with the highest journalistic standards. You can subscribe to these newsletters at almonitor.com.
As an award-winning media service headquartered in Washington, D.C., Al Monitor has a network of over 160 contributors around the world.
So if you haven't done so already, be sure to visit almonitor.com, where you can find all of these newsletters and podcasts, along with first-class reporting and analysis.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm happy to say hello and welcome my friend and colleague Gadi Baltyansky, director of the Geneva Initiative. Hi, shalom, Gadi. How are you?
Hello, Ben. How are you?
Thank you. And we have a lot of things to talk about. First of all, I will ask you, generally speaking, how would you define the current crisis between Washington and Jerusalem? A storm in a teacup or the tip of an iceberg that could drown the Bennett-Lapid government?
Frankly, Ben, I'm not sure even that it's a crisis. I wouldn't even define it as a crisis. You know, there is a disagreement. Obviously, the U.S. administration doesn't see eye to eye with Bennett the Palestinian issue. And there are differences, but it's obviously not a storm. Maybe, I don't know, a light rain, okay? Nobody likes to get wet. And the main concern is that we will face heavy rain later. But as of now, I think things are completely under control. The Americans don't want a confrontation with the Israeli government and vice versa. For the US administration, they still have this kind of sense of relief that Netanyahu is not there. And the Bennett-Lapid's government is the only alternative. So as long as there are no dramatic steps on the ground or any kind of serious escalation, the Americans will not really engage seriously and deeply with this issue. Also, when they have in mind the midterm elections that are 1 year from now, nobody wants to take political risks before that. And when they have China, you know, Ben, I spoke with American officials several times. I met recently with senior European officials. They all say the first priority of this American extension is China. So don't bother us with small details like some Israeli steps that are not exactly popular in Washington.
Okay, so now let's start to go inside the details of the, I think there are three chapters or characters of this semi-crisis. And the first of all is the American consulate in Jerusalem that President Trump shut down and President Biden promised to reopen. Why is this so important to the Americans? And perhaps more to the point, why does Israel oppose it is so strenuously, do you see any sort of diplomatic solution that both sides could accept?
Yes, I can see a solution and I will get to it in a minute. But first, you mentioned in your question, Ben, the issue of the presidential promise. President Biden indeed promised it. So it will be hard for them not to do something regarding it. For the US, it is important. First of all, because of a practical reason beyond the promise. This administration wants to have direct and close ties with the Palestinians, not only with the leadership, but also with the public. And of course, the way to do it is to have some basis, an office on the ground. Beyond that, it's also a symbolic step for this administration. They indeed want to erase at least part of what seems like Trump's legacy, for sure the part that says that the entire area of Jerusalem, including East Jerusalem, including the Arab neighborhoods and refugee camps in Jerusalem are part of Israel. So the way to do it is to bring back the consulate that, by the way, was in Jerusalem for decades, and I didn't see any, I don't know, earthquake in Jerusalem because of that. For Israel, it's mainly a symbolic issue. For those who oppose Bennett, they turn it into a political dramatic event. While it's not the case, but since the Netanyahu supporters and some ideological members of the right-wing camp want to portray Bennett as a leftist, they use it as a pretext. But we all know that there are many consulates in Jerusalem, by the way, even in West Jerusalem, you know, the French consulate, the Italian consulate, they are in West Jerusalem. Nobody thinks or believes that France believes that West Jerusalem should be part of a future Palestinian state. There are many consulates in East Jerusalem, the British one, many European ones. It doesn't affect Israel's position towards those countries. And more than that, there are many offices, they are not being called consulates, but the representative offices in Ramallah. The Swiss offices in Ramallah is not in Jerusalem. And believe me, Switzerland supports the Geneva Initiative, which calls for a two-state solution with the Palestinian capital in Jerusalem. It has nothing to do with it. Even the Jordanians, their office is in Ramallah, not in Jerusalem. So it became much more of a bigger issue because of non-substantial reasons. My suggested solution, which I'm not in love with it, but I think it can be a compromise that both parties can live with, is to open a representative office for the US in Ramallah. Anyway, they want to talk to the leadership, to the politicians, to the players, that most of them are based there. But this office will have a branch in Jerusalem. So the branch in Jerusalem will not be affiliated with the embassy to Israel, will not be part of the embassy to Israel, which will in a way please the Israelis. It won't be an independent office, but it will belong to the office in Ramallah, which in a way symbolizes the ties between the 300,000 Palestinians who live in Jerusalem and the rest of the Palestinian people in the West Bank. I don't think it's an ideal compromise, but I think it's a proposal that both sides can consider.
But you know that the leftists and especially the supporters of Netanyahu will use this compromise that I think it's a smart one, and they know no one knows the details, and they will say, listen, it's not an embassy or a consulate in Jerusalem. Now they are going to Ramallah. They will portray it as a coup, as a treason act, and they will use it politically. So maybe not doing nothing is better.
But doing nothing, I first of all, I think you're right that doing nothing will be the case for the short term. But eventually, they will have to explain it, and eventually, they really need the ties with the Palestinians. They really need not booths on the ground, but diplomats on the ground. So what I'm saying is that is a solution that Bennett will be able to say they didn't open a consulate. Don't worry, it's not a consulate, but their representative office is in Ramallah. But the Americans will say, we said that we will restart our ties with the Palestinians, and we have a presence in Jerusalem because we don't see the entire Jerusalem as part of Israel. And that's the difference between us and Trump. And in a way, this is the promise that President Biden made before the election.
Yes, and we have to accept it. Let's move on and talk about the Benny Gantz. A week ago, Defense Minister Gantz designated six Palestinian groups as terrorist organizations, a move that generated harsh international anger and domestic criticism from the center-left government parties. Israel insists it had solid intelligence about the organizations, had received legal guidance on this decision. The Shin Bet says it has proof that the groups are a fundraising and money laundering operation for the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, a known terrorist organization. Did Gantz really have to make this move at this timing? And if you were in Bennett's place, how would you continue battling terrorism, but at the same time avoid losing international legitimacy?
You know, we are this week commemorating Yitzhak Rabin, who was assassinated 26 years ago. His famous slogan was that we will combat terrorism as there was no political process, and we will conduct the political process as there was no terrorism.
I think he said the peace process.
Peace process.
Yes.
Yes, you're right. But since Bennett is not talking about the peace process.
Now it's political, yes.
Yeah. And I believe it is the basic of it is true. No Israeli expects or wants our prime minister not to fight terrorism. This is a top priority for us, and rightly so, our security, our anti-terrorism battle. This is a real issue, by the way, not like the consulate, which for most of the Israelis, they're indifferent and they don't really care. They care much more about the visas. We didn't touch the issue of visas. But this is a real concern for Israelis. If they will get rid of the need for a visa to the States, this is more important than the exact venue of a consulate. But security is above all. So I expect an Israeli, my Minister of Defense and the security establishment to fight terrorism. And if they have the evidence and the intelligence that several individuals or even small organizations actually became terrorists, they should deal with it, no doubt. But when you declare large, highly respected organizations, very well known, and you design them as terrorist organizations, which means, you know, the secretary and every employee became a terrorist. Before doing it, you really need not only strong evidence, but you need to show it, you need to prove it. Otherwise, it's problematic. And why Israelis or Palestinians or Americans or Europeans will believe you that you take such a serious, dramatic step and really to design a very large human rights organization as a bunch of terrorists, you need more than a statement or a tweet. So I think that it was not done in the right way, not in the smart way. And I think it's still not too late to correct it. And those who are involved in terrorism or in violence, they should be arrested and brought to trial, no doubt about it.
But you know that, first of all, this is a constituency of the defense minister. This is exactly his ability to declare an organization as a terror one. And we are dealing now here in intelligence, in secret intelligence and sources you cannot you cannot tell about. It's not going to trial. It's collecting intelligence, and by the way, with the help and the low experts in the military establishment are following it. So it's difficult to show the world the intelligence. Maybe I think it was wiser to send a special messenger to Washington and many to maybe to other capitals in Europe before the declaration and not after.
Exactly. What they are doing now, trying to show the evidence or to share the information with some officials, it's not public, but at least you tell them before declaring it and not after, trying to make some damage control. I believe, I hope that everything is being done according to the Israeli law. But let's remember that the Israeli law is on this issue is problematic for many international actors. Now, I have no doubt that this is under the authority of the Minister of Defense, but he doesn't live in a bubble. The fact that he, according to the media, that he didn't brief the prime minister and the foreign minister and other players is a mistake. And it's due to the lack of strategy. This government doesn't have a clear strategy what we do with the Palestinians, for sure not in Gaza, but also not in the West Bank. And when you don't have a real comprehensive strategy, then every minister can do whatever he thinks that is right without the consultation, the prior consultation, which I think was a mistake, even if the step is the right one.
So actually what you're saying, if sometimes it's better to be smart than right. Now let's go now to the construction permits issue. Prime Minister Bennett insisted that the planning authorities approved 3,200 housing units, although he knew the Americans would be mad. This week, Israel is supposed to approve 1,200 housing units for Palestinians in the West Bank in order to appease his center-left coalition partners and the Americans. Is that enough? Do you have a more effective formula for implementing Bennett's policy, which he calls limiting the conflict?
The formula is conduct talks, dialogue, and negotiations with the Palestinians. A total 100% freeze of settlement activities, although I would very much personally like to see it, it's really impossible. And one can understand, first of all, if there is natural growth, mainly in the settlement blocks, in the parts that according to conventional wisdom, will remain in Israel in any future solution, take the Olmert proposal or the Geneva Initiative model or the Clinton parameters. But you know what? The security barrier, even if you want to refer to something that I don't want to refer, the Trump plan, so you cannot justify building in the areas that even according to Trump and Netanyahu are supposed to be part of a Palestinian state. So that's one, limited to the area. Two, conduct political negotiations at the same time. And three, don't live in the illusion that limiting the conflict, shrinking the conflict, managing the conflict is a viable option for the long run. At the end of the day, we will need to try and solve the conflict. When Bennett says, and he says it because he is for sure more honest than Netanyahu, and he, when he says that he's not interested in talks with the Palestinians, he's not interested in peace talks with the Palestinians, he says it not because he's afraid of a failure. He says because he's afraid that they will succeed. And he's not willing to pay the price of this success. An agreement is possible. You can support it or oppose it. But the fact of the matter is when you say that you're not interested in talks and you just make unilateral steps on the ground, you will face criticism and eventually you will lose the confidence that people give you as a benefit of the first time of your term. So my advice to Bennett would be, try to limit this natural growth to the settlement blocks that are very close to the green line. At the same time, be positive towards the possibility of talking to the Palestinians.
And we'll talk about Bennett in a moment because I want to ask you about him as well. But talking about a few state solution and solving the conflict, you are a fervent advocate of the two state solution. It is it still relevant? Do you think the future Palestinian leadership on the day after Abu Mazen will follow in his footsteps and continue to believe in the peace process as we have known it? Or is the idea of one state gaining traction on the Palestinian side as well?
The idea of one state is indeed becoming more, the talk of the town among Palestinians and also the reality on the ground. But you cannot say one state solution. It's a one state problem, conflict, bloodshed, violence, because Jews, Zionists like you and me will not give up on the idea of having a sovereign state for the Jewish people. And the Palestinians will not give up on their right to have self-determination and to vote for a sovereign body that basically decides about their life. So this battle will continue in one state. Now, the idea of the two states, the partition of the land, is an old idea. And people like to think about things outside the box, new, fresh ideas, which I'm all in favor of. You can think about the relations between the two states. You can think about the road, how to get there. But the basic idea of partition of the land, two states for the two peoples, is the only viable solution. And even the Palestinians, now, last week, there was a poll published by Dr. Khalil Shikaki, which showed a 10% increase in the support among Palestinians for the two-state solution. That's because it decreased a few months ago after the confrontation with Hamas in May, in Gaza, in East Jerusalem. So they became more extremist. Now that there are some positive steps on the ground, some dialogue with the Americans, there's more hope and more support. Eventually, we will get there. The only question is how much time and how much blood we will have to see till we get there.
And will it happen in our lifetime? Let's move to politics.
Israeli politics. The way, Ben, in the question if it will happen in Mahmoud Abbas' lifetime, because those who criticize him today may miss him when he is no longer with us. He's 86 years old. And I'm not sure that his successor will have the same kind of legitimacy, even if he's not popular, but the legitimacy is one of the founding fathers to make the necessary compromises that without them we will not be able to achieve.
And another phenomena is that we always miss the previous leader that we just got rid of. You are intimately familiar with Israeli politics, both from the inside and as an observer. You were there next to Rabin and Peres, Beilin and Barak, Tzipi Livni and many, many others. How do you see this unprecedented Israeli government that includes both left and the right, both right-wing diehards like Gideon Saar and Zev Elkin, and left-wing icons like Tamar Zandberg, Nitzan Horowitz and Merav Michaeli? Do you think Naftali Bennett, who prides himself on being a right-wing ideologue, is capable of breaking sharply to the middle in the search for a new political base?
My answer is yes. I think this unique, strange creature of this in this government has the potential to really do some good things if they will have enough time and enough courage to do them. You know, you mentioned some people from the center or center left that I had the privilege to work with. But let's remind our listeners about the leaders that came from the right. The first one was Begin, but if I will not go now, not elaborate on the entire list, but we are not young enough to remember Begin, who withdrew from the entire Sinai Peninsula and evacuated settlers, and Shamil, who went to Madrid and started the negotiations with the Palestinians, and of course Sharon, who evacuated every Jew from the Gaza Strip, and even Netanyahu, who eventually agreed or supported the plan that includes a Palestinian state on 84% of the territories. So Bennett may be an exception. I'm not saying that for sure he will follow the steps of his predecessors, but I think we should give him this chance. We should not give up on him and say to ourselves, well, he comes from the right, so he will stay there. You mentioned, Ben, and rightly so, his need for a political base. His traditional supporters are disappointed and most probably will not support him in the future. He needs to go to the center. He can do it. He doesn't have to be anymore an hostage of the extremists, of the lunatics. With this strange coalition, I'm not saying that he can arrive tomorrow to the desired destination of a permanent status agreement, but he can bring us closer to it. He has the potential with his partners, with some compromises, and I believe that the international community and the Jewish communities abroad and all the relevant players should not say in advance, well, he is coming from the right, there's nothing we can do with him. On the contrary, look at the precedents, look at the history, and learn that there is a big potential there that Bennett will surprise us all and will do what is needed for the interest of Israel, which will also serve his political interest.
I am a little more skeptic, but I will let you hope. And a final word, I will not let you go without asking about Ram party leader Mansour Abbas. Many regard the first ever participation of an Arab party in the government, and not just any party, an Islamist party, as an irreversible, dramatic watershed for Israel, and perhaps as this government's greatest achievement that will echo for generations to come. Do you agree, or do you think it was a one-off, an accident of circumstances that will fail to leave its mark?
Well, I think if it's a one-time, as you call it, accident, I think it will be a surprise. But, you know, you mentioned before the fact that sometimes often we miss leaders that are not with us anymore. So we wish Netanyahu, of course, to live healthy until 120, but he's no more a prime minister. Now, I don't miss him, and I suspect that you also don't miss him too much, but I want to give him this credit. Netanyahu is the one who legitimized the participation of an Arab party, of an Islamist party in the government, and I don't want to take the credit from him. He did something that may be historical, very significant. We will see now the budget. If the budget passes, I think many Arab citizens of Israel will feel the impact of this participation in the government, there is anyway more and more integration of the Arab population within Israel. We just saw it in the COVID crisis with all the Arab doctors and nurses and people in the medical system. So I think there is a big potential here if Abbas and his party will indeed bring positive outcomes and results to the population, to their constituency, which should be the case. I think we will remember this step as the beginning of a new era in Israeli politics, in which many more Palestinians will vote, will be engaged in the parliament and in the government. And this also may, it's good for itself, for the democratic values, but it also can be another reason for a little bit of optimism in the context of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yadi Beltyansky, I share this hope with you, of course, and I thank you very much for this fascinating talk. Gadi Beltyansky, the director of the Geneva Initiative, thank you very much for joining us here in On Israel and Al Monitor. We'll now take a short break and come back right after it with some final thoughts. Thank you. Toda, Gadi. Bye.
Hello, I'm Gilles Kepel, professor at Sciences Po and Normal Sup in Paris, and author of a number of books and articles on the Middle East. Through my new podcast, Reading the Middle East, on the award-winning media service Al Monitor, we will take a deep dive into the trends in the region with the authors and thought leaders who are shaping how we think about the Middle East. Reading the Middle East will be a fantastic addition to Al Monitor's outstanding podcast lineup, including On the Middle East with Andrew Parazziliti and Amber Inzamam, and On Israel with Ben Caspit. You can subscribe on your favorite listening platforms. We look forward to your joining our conversation.
Thank you for staying with us. A few interesting points from the conversation with Gadi Beltyansky, the Director General of the Geneva Initiative. We were speaking about Defense Minister Benny Gantz that declared six Palestinian organizations as terror groups. And Beltyansky said that it's obvious and logical that Israel will fight terror in all the, its means, but sometimes you need to be smart, not just right. And maybe the defense minister should have sent his messengers to Washington and the capitals in Europe to show the intelligence of the Shin Bet and all the material that led him to this decision before the declaration and not after. And then he could have saved Israel the criticism that it got in the international community. About the never-ending crisis with the American consulate in East Jerusalem, Beltyansky said that he feels there is an approach that can maybe lead the sides to a solution. On one hand, this is a presidential promise, election promise, and President Biden have to fulfill it. On the other hand, the Americans can open an office of interests or a consulate in Ramallah with a branch in Jerusalem, and the Israeli government can swallow it. Actually, this whole issue is actually nonsense, but the Bennett opponents are using it to portray Bennett as a lefty and as a weak leader. And there is a chance to find a solution that will appease both sides. When I asked Beltyansky if we are facing a real storm in the relationship between Israel and the United States, he said that he's optimistic. He doesn't think we are facing a storm, maybe a light rain. He said the American administration does not want any crisis with the Israeli government and vice versa. The Americans have their own agenda. It is China and China. And Israel needs as much quiet as possible. And the sides will have to find a way to coexist. this new coalition in Israel, said Baltiansky, is very unique, very strange creature. But he is optimistic about the potential of Naftali Bennett and his colleagues maybe to go to find a new path, something creative, in order stay or to keep the peace process alive. And he gave examples, of course, of leaders, Israeli leaders that came from the right, maybe the far right, but made peace. People like Menachem Begin, of course, that signed an historical peace agreement with Egypt. Yitzhak Shamir, an ultra-hawk that led Israel to the Madrid conference. And, of course, Ariel Sharon that built most of the Israeli settlements and then just uprooted the whole Gaza settlements and another four settlements in the Samaria. I hope you found it interesting, and I hope to find you here next week in Al Monitor in On Israel. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. Thank you. Take care.